Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And today we're taking you back to Iran, 32 years ago, and a revolution is underway. Louise Hidalgo reports.
It's February 1979. A specially chartered aeroplane takes off from Paris, bound for Tehran. On board is a man who will launch a revolution.
This is the man they call the father of the revolution. And this is the moment that millions in Iran have been waiting for.
After long years in exile, Ayatollah Khomeini is finally returning home. Just weeks before, the Ayatollah had given an interview in Paris, calling on Iran's ruler of the past 37 years, Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, to give up power.
We are opposed to the Shah. He has both offended religion and betrayed his country during his rule. For this reason, all Iranians are against him.
Iranians had been showing how much they opposed the Shah on the streets for months. But still, the end came fast. On January the 16th, the Shah flew out of Iran for the last time.
When Shah left the country, Ayatollah Khomeini, he said, "I should return to Iran immediately."
Mohsen Sazigara was a young student working for the Ayatollah in Paris. The plan had been to return only when the revolution inside Iran was certain. The Shah had left a prime minister in charge, Dr. Shapour Bakhtiar. Mohsen was worried about what he would do if Ayatollah Khomeini went back.
I remember one night we had a tough discussion with him that it might be dangerous. Bakhtiar is still powerful enough to arrest Ayatollah if he goes back to Iran, or we don't know what will happen.
But the Ayatollah would not be deterred. In the early hours of February the 1st, he and his supporters, accompanied by a group of Western journalists, were on board an Air France jumbo jet bound for Tehran.
In the aeroplane, all the night I was awake. It was wonderful for me that he said to his son, who sat down beside to him, that the name of his son was Ahmad, said that, "Ahmad, watch that our passports not to be lost." When I heard that sentence, I said to myself that Ayatollah Khomeini has still has no feeling that he will be the leader of the country. I think that none of us, of course, had the experience of a revolution and, taking over a country.
But that was what they were about to do. First, though, they had to land. When it reached Tehran, the plane circled over the city for 20 minutes. On board, it seemed an eternity. Would they be allowed to land? But at last, the moment came that they'd all been waiting for.
After his long years in exile, the first hesitant steps of Ayatollah Khomeini on Iranian soil. It was a homecoming to end all homecomings, a moment of triumph that had finally been forced on a reluctant government by the stubbornness of this man.
There were chaotic scenes. A crush of photographers and journalists greeted the Ayatollah, who was then bundled into a car which sped across the tarmac, chased by cheering airport workers. Inside the airport terminal, a huge crowd was waiting. Outside was an even more extraordinary sight.
Nobody could possibly know how many millions lined the route of his 20-mile drive through Tehran, but it could not have been less than three. They'd come from all over the country to see the man they acknowledge as the only true leader of Iran, and nothing was going to stop them getting even the briefest of glimpses.
Ayatollah Khomeini was being taken to the main cemetery in Tehran, where he was due to give his victory speech. Mohsen Sazigara was following behind.
I was supposed to be with the journalists with some minibuses to follow the Ayatollah to the cemetery. But it didn't work because millions of people were waiting for him and people came to the street behind his car and there was no way for the other cars to follow him.
When you saw the sea of people who had come out to welcome him, did it surprise you?
We expected millions of people. I remember that I said to some journalists that about 5 million people, maybe I was exaggerating, but frankly speaking, whenever I see the excitement of the people, especially when there are millions of people. I can't keep myself. I start to cry. This is what happened for me on that day too. Nobody noticed, but some people were crying. Some people were kissing each other and say congratulations. And I started to cry in that minibus as well.
In the end, there were so many people that the vehicles had to be abandoned. The Ayatollah was helicoptered to the cemetery instead. As for Mohsen and the journalists, they gave up. The journalists headed for their hotels and offices, and Mohsen decided to go home.
My father was alone in the house. Everybody, my mother, my sisters, my brothers, they went out to join the other people to say welcome to Ayatollah. So my father was alone. And he didn't agree the years before that. He didn't like me to be a political activist. But when he opened the door, he looked at me. That was the first time in my life, and maybe the last time. He hugged me and kissed me and said that, congratulations, my son. I didn't think that you will succeed to kick out the Shah from the country. I congratulate you and the others this victory. I didn't think that you can make it.
For 23-year-old Mohsen, it was a proud moment. But the work was not over. The revolution wasn't yet won.
The possibility of bloodshed was in our minds. But first of all, I was very busy on those days. Lots of jobs we had to do. That was first time in my life that you should answer to the thousands of people, because the government of Bakhtiar was not able to control the country. There was no police, strikes all around the country. Gradually, I felt on those days that we are going to be involved in running a country.
4 days after returning to Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini appointed his own prime minister. Local revolutionary committees were set up. Iran had two centres of authority. It wasn't until the 10th of February that the end game finally came. Prime Minister Bakhtiar had ordered a curfew. Khomeini said it should be ignored. Millions went onto the streets.
They started to attack two police stations. And all that night, that long night, I can say, I was awake. Sometimes I went to the streets to watch the scenes. People started to attack not only to police stations but to garrisons, took the guns out of the military bases.
The next morning, the Imperial Guard sent tanks onto the streets. The day of the revolution had come.
In a day-long orgy of violence, the people seized control from the Shah's government and all it stood for. Army barracks were plundered and guns distributed almost like confetti. They toppled statues of the Shah and sent soldiers and police running for their lives. Gunmen loyal to the Ayatollah Khomeini assaulted the Iranian parliament. For more than 2 hours, we ducked behind buildings and watched as a fierce gun battle raged. Then we saw thousands of people storm the parliament buildings. They did a war dance under the chandeliers, ripped up photographs of the Shah, smashed bottles of liquor, and tore up magazine photographs of nude women. In one fell swoop, it seemed, Iran had become an Islamic republic.
Mohsen Sazegara held several senior government positions in that new Islamic republic. But after Ayatollah Khomeini died in 1989, he became increasingly disillusioned. He went back to academia, but called for political reform, and in 2003 he was arrested and held for almost 4 months. He now lives in America.
Mohsen Sazegara was talking to Louise Hidalgo for Witness. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.